This episode is brought to you by Escape Makers' first-of-its-kind virtual agritourism conference. For more information, go to escapemaker.biz. That's escapemaker.biz.
Have you ever wanted to open a restaurant, launch your own food brand, or dive into the ever-changing world of food media? Well, buckle up. Join us for Aspiration to Action, a special live podcast on Monday, June 3rd at Haven's Kitchen in Manhattan. Zara Tangora and Bretton Scott, hosts of Life's a Banquet, will lead us through tales of the good, the bad, and the transformative. Featuring food world innovators and HRN hosts Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly, Eli Sussman, host of The Line, along with his brother Max, and Allison Kane, host of In the Sauce, in conversation with Jenny Britton Bauer. Light refreshments will be provided by Paris Gourmet, Wolfer Estate Vineyard, and Tahani. Get your tickets before they sell out by going to heritageradionetwork.org/action.
All right, hello. This is Lisa Held coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you're listening to The Farm Report, a Heritage Radio Network show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. Today, I'm here with Geraldine Simonis, the head beekeeper at New York City's largest rooftop farm, the Brooklyn Grange, and Renelle St. Jour, a program coordinator and beekeeper at City Growers. Thank you both so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. Welcome. And Geraldine is wearing this amazing sunflower shirt that perfectly frames our conversation about pollinators.
All about the bees.
I wish everyone listening could see. we'll post a photo after. so I think I want to talk a lot about what you do and what beekeeping in cities looks like. But before we get into that, I'm really interested in just personally how each of you got interested in beekeeping. So why don't you give us a little background first?
Yeah, I guess, well, for Renelle and I, it's a family connection. I'll let him develop a little bit more his family connection. But in my case, my grandfather and uncle were and are beekeepers in Belgium. And growing up, I would spend my summers on their farm and, you know, just like spending time around bees and their passion for bees. So I never really understood why anyone was scared of them,
right?
Because they were so great. And the moment that things changed for me, you know, professionally speaking, was arriving in New York City 6 years ago, and just really having this concrete jungle around and feeling like I, you know, needed that connection with nature. So I sought out apprenticeships and actually found the beekeeping apprenticeship at the Brooklyn Grange. Mm. And so I did that parallel of my full-time job. And, you know, it just sort of had to, I wanted to spend all my time with bees after that. So then I quit my job last year and have been doing it full-time.
Amazing. Yeah. It started as apprentice and now you're the
beekeeper. And it is, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with the urban beekeeping. It's really hard to you know, develop experience here, like in rural Belgium, you know, it was like, or even rural anywhere, mostly there are tons of beekeepers that you can learn with, and your local beekeeping chapter is really active. And in New York City, you know, it's not like access to beekeepers isn't readily available, so just like everything in New York City, you have to like fight for it and run after it.
Absolutely. Renelle, how about you?
Yeah, so my grandfather on my mother and father's side were beekeepers in Haiti. Although I didn't figure that out until I actually started beekeeping, that my grandfather told me, yeah, he kept bees in Haiti. Unfortunately, he passed away, but we did get to talk a little bit about bees, which was good. And I started working at City Growers 3 years ago, and beekeeping was a really big part of the organization. Our executive director was a beekeeper. Our director of education was a beekeeper. So they took me out into the field and, you know, showed me beekeeping, and I was immediately, like, in love. So that's how I got into beekeeping.
Hmm. Awesome. It's so interesting that you both have a family connection. That's really cool.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people that you talk to who know a beekeeper. Now you know one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or two.
Two. Geraldine, it's funny, you mentioned that in New York, it can be hard to find beekeepers, but mm-hmm. it's also, I think, kind of interesting that, well, I guess 2010 was when beekeeping became legal again in New York. And since then, it seems like there's a surprising number of hives, and it seems to really be growing from what I can tell. I mean, I've seen hives in really interesting places, like the roof of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Yeah. And I mean, Brooklyn Grange is probably the largest, it's the largest rooftop farm, but probably one of the biggest examples of operations keeping bees, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about the scale, like how many hives you have and what that looks like?
Yeah. In New York City, we, like everything, space is at a premium. Mm-hmm. We have to look up to keep our hives, and oftentimes they're on rooftops. So, you know, sometimes when you speak to beekeepers outside of the city, they're like, I keep 2,000 hives. And you're like, oh, my God. All right. So compared to them, like, the operation seems small.
Right.
But for the city, yes, we manage our own. We manage hives of our own. So apiaries on our Long Island City farm and our Brooklyn Navy Yard farm. And we also have an apiary in Harlem. That's a partnership with the Doe Fund. Mm-hmm. Parallel to that, we maintain hives for clients. So we do consulting, full service, so installation, maintenance, and honey harvest if applicable. All in all, I think this year we're about 40 hives total, and it brings us to, you know, kind of what you were talking about. It brings us to a wide variety of locations, most often than not on rooftops and tiny ladders. And it's fascinating. You really do get to see a different perspective of the city, because they're all over. We have hives in New Jersey as well. So it's pretty cool to see when you open up the hive what the bees are picking up on.
Interesting. I definitely want to talk more about that. Mm. And then some of City Growers' hives are also at Brooklyn Grange Farm locations. Is that right, Rinal?
Yes. So we have one hive at the Long Island City location and one at the Brooklyn Navy Yard location. But we also have many other hives throughout the city as well. In total, 7.
Okay. And where are the other ones located?
So we have 3 at a public school on PS20, which is in Clinton Hill. Mm. And it was actually a pilot program last year, training parents from the school, someone on the PTA, to eventually manage the bees. And that's actually coming to an end now. And we've been working with them as an apprenticeship. And then we also have 2 hives at the Naval Cemetery landscape site as well.
At the school, are they on a roof as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And City Growers is an educational organization. So a lot of what you do is about teaching kids about beekeeping, right? Can you give listeners a sense of, like, the kinds of programs that you have for students?
Yeah, so we do bring students up on the farm for tours, and we have a honeybee education program where they can learn just the basics about honeybees. But in the summer, we have a program called Brooklyn Bee Corps, where we train 5 high school students to become beekeepers and manage a native plant site as well.
Wow. And is that popular? Like, are high school students really interested in learning about bees?
Definitely. It's very popular. It makes it really tough because we have to have group interviews. There's a lot of interest in the program and a lot of applicants. So, yeah, definitely. It's very, very, very popular.
Interesting. And do you think, do you track, like, how many of those students go on to actually become beekeepers?
We haven't yet. The program started 3 years ago,
okay.
So we're still pretty early in regards to that program. But we do have one student that's actually helping manage the hives at PS20 that want to maintain relationship with bees.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Huh. And Brooklyn Grange does education as well for adults, is that right, related to beekeeping?
Yeah, so through our events department, actually, we have public workshops. And we also have private workshops. And So those are, you know, taught once a month pretty much to your average New Yorkers who are just seeking an adventure and new experience. And then for those who want to, you know, really dive into the world of beekeeping, we have a beekeeping education program that I teach with a co-instructor, Danielle Knott, and that's an 8-month-long program.
Wow.
So we meet pretty much every 2 weeks, and that's really, you know, for training beekeepers, but also creating a community of beekeepers. Because like anything, there's so much information out there, and sometimes there are competing opinions and competing personalities. And so it's really nice to meet every 2 weeks and just have this like really positive, learning experience and building a community.
Right. And well, thinking about the learning experience, I want to go back to Ranelle about the kids. How do kids respond? Like the first time you bring them to the farm, you know, maybe it's like the workshop or they're starting the beekeeping program, like especially kids in the city that maybe have not been exposed to a lot of bees or farms, like what is that like for them?
Yes, I've noticed over the years that the reception of the bees have been better and better. I think there's definitely been some awareness raised on bees and how important they are, because every year they're more and more excited about it. But you do have a few students, you know, that are really hesitant, you know, to interact with the bees. But usually our goal is by the end of the lesson, they lose that fear. And we actually do keep data on that within our workshops. And usually about 85% of the students who once had a fear of bees after leaving the farm no longer have a fear of bees.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool data.
Yeah. And I've been around during some of their tours, if you can call them, and it's really fun to see. They have all of these different games and like educational games to explain what pollination is and, you know, really interact. And it's fun to watch, because even like I've done things with kids and with adults, or beekeeping events with kids and adults, and kids have the best questions, and sometimes they're more fearless than adults are. You kind of see the adults like backing away, like,
right?
Oh, no, bees. And then the kids are like, how do bees breathe? What are they doing in there? How many are in there? You're like, yes.
So many questions.
Yes, that's awesome.
That's great. Well, and you know, I have a lot of questions about just like, well, how do bees breathe? No, I have a lot of questions just about how urban beekeeping works. Like, one thing I was thinking about was, like, how far do bees travel? Like, in the city, if you have bees at Brooklyn Grange, are they pretty much staying on the farm? Or are they, you know, are they going to fly to a community garden 10 blocks away, pick up some pollen from flowers, come back to the farm? How does that work?
Yeah, so bees travel up to 3 miles. And if the forage is terrible, they can probably go farther than that.
Wow.
But yeah, that's usually how we scope out new locations if we want to expand. Because you can look on Google Maps. Google Satellite is awesome. And, you know, just sort of look from a 3-mile radius from where you are to see what the forage is like. So at our Navy Yard, at our Brooklyn Navy Yard apiary, we know that the girls are going, you know, even across the river, they're probably going to Battery City Park, Prospect Park, and then they're also, Fort Greene Park is really valuable, and most likely, our neighbors that have, you know, flower pots and that are doing their role in helping our pollinator friends.
That's amazing. See, I had no idea. And is there ever, I was reading an article about forage in the city. Is there ever an issue with the bees not having enough, like where there's just not enough for them to?
Well, in New York City, we have 2 main nectar flows. So the first one is the linden tree that we are expecting to bloom in the next couple of weeks. And then we have a later nectar flow in the fall that's with asters and goldenrod. So those 2 plants and trees are the best resource for nectar.
Okay.
And then throughout the season, there will be smaller sources. And as far as pollen, actually in New York City, they do have a very diverse forage. They have diversity of forage options. They're is one point usually like end of July that there's what we call a nectar dearth. So there isn't as much for them to pick up on. So we usually support them, if we can during that time by feeding or making sure that they have enough honey to get them through that dearth.
Hmm. How do you feed them? Like if they don't have enough, what do they?
So we feed them sugar water. So the spring feed is a 1-to-1 ratio, and we usually include some essential oils because the bees are attracted to the smell of lemongrass. So if we add some of those scents, then they'll be attracted to the sugar water.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as nutrient rich as honey. So it's really just kind of to help them out. It's a short-term solution. Like we don't feed them throughout the whole season because it wouldn't really provide the nutrition that they need.
Right.
Long-term wise. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in addition to them having enough forage, are there any other challenges to beekeeping that are particular to an urban environment?
Yeah, definitely logistical. Yeah. Yeah, the fact that most of the hives are going to be on rooftops means that you're going to have to carry equipment back up.
Yeah.
You know, they're also in buildings, so you have to make sure that your bees are confined to the roof and not getting into the building, because you really want to, make the presence of the bees as little as possible, in terms of being a nuisance to people.
Mm.
So there's those logistical things, and also neighbors. Some people, don't feel too well about bees, so that's also one thing that... one issue. And also, if there's ever an issue with the building and you have to move your hive, that's also a huge challenge to beekeepers.
Is that, do you get a lot of people who are like, we don't want bees near us? And that
it goes either way. I guess
I'd be like really excited. I'd be like, oh gosh, how much would it be? But I guess like when you haven't thought about that reaction.
I mean, you have people whose neighbors have gardens and they're really excited about pollinators and they're like, this is so awesome. Yeah. We're seeing more bees. Isn't this great? But I know of a beekeeper colleague site who. Well, it was years ago, but they were next to, their neighbors had a pool and, the honeybees were going towards the pool because it's a water source for them. And sometimes they just prefer chlorinated water, unfortunately.
Weird.
They prefer soil water. So it's nutrient rich, but in a pinch, chlorinated works, I guess, for them. But so in that case, the neighbors are just like, this is a nuisance. I can't hang out by my pool. But as you mentioned before, beekeeping is legal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been legal since 2010, and the main regulations require us to have, register them, and also have a water source and have movable frames. So as long as you are within the law, it's really just about being neighborly after that. So moving it maybe further from the property line or building a trellis so the bees fly higher or something like that. But
Well, and I guess in New York, people are going to have way weirder things happening in their neighborhood than some bees,
Yeah. I mean, you would think, I feel like, we've all had probably weird and scary experiences, but some people are very scared of honeybees and kind of like what we were talking about before. It's like, well, cause more often than not, they haven't been stung.
Right. So the fear of it is
fear is like they built it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So our solution is everyone should just get stung by a honeybee once.
No.
And realize that it's totally fine. It's no big deal unless you're allergic, in which case.
Well, there's apitherapy. That's the it's a therapy that they use honey stings and bee venom to help with ailments such as arthritis or,
really?
Or things like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If you want to go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. That's going to be a whole other discussion for sure.
So that's what I think about every time I get stung. I'm like, oh, it's free apitherapy.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break for a word from a sponsor. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how bees benefit the city, and then also how what you're doing can potentially help bee populations. We'll be right back.
Cool.
This episode is brought to you by Escape Makers' first-of-its-kind virtual agritourism conference. Did you know that every $1 invested in tourism marketing returns on average $3 to $8 back? Not a bad ROI. Learn how to grow your agritourism business via 12 workshops entirely women-led. The local travel landscape is rapidly changing to meet the demands of the leisure, event, and corporate travel sectors. Whether you're a farmer or producer, a winemaker, a restaurateur, or a destination marketing organization, there's more opportunity than ever to capture these markets. The Virtual Agritourism Conference will provide you with insights and skills to keep your target demographic coming back for more. 14 speakers providing 6+ hours of education that you can watch at your convenience anytime on any device. Maximize your time, budget, and resources, and focus on creative solutions to help your business thrive. Presented by Escape Maker and Fulton Stall Market, the full conference access pass is now available for purchase. Use the code HERITAGE2019 for $50 off a full pass at checkout. For more information and to purchase your pass, go to escapemaker.biz. That's escapemaker.biz.
All right, we're back. This is Lisa Held. You're listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Geraldine from the Brooklyn Grange Farm and Ranel from City Growers, and we've been talking about beekeeping. So we were talking a lot about the logistics of having bees in the city. I want to talk a little bit more about some of the benefits and bigger issues around this. What do you think are the biggest benefits of keeping bees in a place like New York?
Yeah, so pollination is definitely the obvious one.
Right.
Pollination is just bigger than just, you know, spreading the pollen. It also creates food for other insects, habitats for other life. So it plays a really big part in the ecosystem. And then also collecting the honey, you know, that's very good for beekeepers, for enthusiasm regarding pollinators and keeping beekeeping going and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually reading a study recently from UBC in British Columbia, and they were talking about this ongoing study in Vancouver where they're testing honey from different neighborhoods. And they can find different levels of lead or zinc or other irritants. And so they've been doing it for 4 years now. And what they're positing is that honey can be a biomonitor of the health of an ecosystem. So beyond, you know, like what Ranel was saying of the benefit of, you know, growing beautiful food and
right.
Helping the seeds and also just, you know, building the sense of community, bees are really important. Well, pollinators in general mm-hmm. are, but we can test this through the honey, mm-hmm. are great, you know, monitors of our ecosystem health.
Right. Would you even be able to operate Brooklyn Grange at the scale that it is right now if you didn't have bees? Like, if you didn't keep bees, just because, I mean, like, in terms of pollination, you know, the plants
yeah.
depend so much on, are there enough pollinators around that, hard question.
Yeah, definitely hard question. It is although you have to register your hives with the city, unfortunately, there's no real map that tells you where the bees are. That would be really helpful for all of us.
I was looking for one, actually.
Yeah, so I know of some beekeepers, if city growers continued, then their hives in Clinton Hill can continue pollinating them. You know, usually farming and beekeeping definitely go together. I think that it would probably survive, but perhaps the food itself wouldn't look as tasty because it wouldn't be as well pollinated. And, you know, they're beyond just the food growing aspect. As Ranel said, the interest in beekeeping is just growing and growing. So, the fact that we have workshops and the fact that we have an education program, you know, brings people to the farm, and they get really excited about that. And it allows us to educate them about, you know, how food is grown. And what's really cool is you can actually walk around the farm and see the bees pollinating the plants and vegetables around the farm. And you can see the color of the pollen of, you know, those. So the, you know, I saw that the clover, it's like a sort of like clear white pollen, and sunflowers are yellow pollen. And so it's fun to see that direct relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I also think the enthusiasm around beekeeping has also raised a lot of awareness about pesticides and how they affect all of our insects. And so I think that's another positive benefit of beekeeping.
Well, and that brings up another point that I wanted to talk about, which, right, is this, you know, idea of we're losing pollinators, and it's a huge issue, right? Colony collapse, and there's a lot of research that shows some of the pesticides that we're using, like neonicotinoids, are potentially causing that. And I was reading this article about how in the Midwest and California Central Valley, where agriculture is way more concentrated, you know, that's actually where bees are disappearing the fastest. And like I think there's this funny like thing where I had to wrap my head around, like, oh, you'd think in these agricultural areas there'd be more bees because they need them, you need pollinators, there's plants, but like those areas are so the habitats are destroyed, you know, they're so deforested, and then also they're using all these pesticides. So I guess that's a long way of saying that maybe cities are almost can be like a refuge.
Yeah, I mean, intensive agriculture and monoculture, it's, you know, a very poor source of nutrition because, and you probably came across this in that article, there's like brokerage, pollination brokers. So commercial beekeepers that, you know, put hives on the truck and the bees go around the United States. So they'll be in the citrus and they'll be there for the almond bloom. You know, in Maine, they'll be there for the blueberries. And that, you know, in that case, it can be really challenging for them because they don't necessarily know what the grower is, you know, spraying their crops with. If they are spraying it, perhaps they're not giving enough time for it to dissipate. So I'd be curious to see that study, if it was the, you know, the bees actually from that population, or if it was just the intensive agriculture that the brokered pollinators, you know, were sort of getting sick progressively there. But yeah, it is definitely, I mean, you talk about colony collapse disorder, which is, you know, a huge and scary term, but in everyday beekeeping, it's not really a term that we use because it's, that's sort of a symptom of, you know, habitat loss, poor nutrition, and varroa mites that are kind of like the bane of every beekeeper's existence at this point.
What are they called?
Varroa mites, V-A-R-R-O-A. It's a varroa destructor. So they feed on the fat bodies of honeybees, and they weaken them. So they make them more susceptible to diseases, and they also transmit diseases such as Israeli deformed wing virus, or paralysis and deformed wing virus. And, yeah, they just, they are a pain. They arrived in the States around the 80s. And it is definitely the number one challenge that we have beekeeping.
Interesting. They just can show up and...
Well, they are transmitted socially, I guess, if you will. Because, you know, like the mite can be left on a flower or like bees are trying to rob another hive and they are transmitted that way. The mites are actually pretty big when you compare to the size of the bee. And sometimes you can see a few mites on a bee and, you know, it's just, it makes them... it weakens them and makes them less likely to survive winter, which is how we determine colony health, is the overwinter rate.
Mm, interesting. How do you deal with a situation where if you get those mites, like, what can you do?
The interest in varroa mites, well, so... Because colony collapse was so scary, I guess, it got a lot of research funds, so it allowed them to study more and more what the other challenges are. And for varroa mites, the research is ever going. So there are, the current science-based information that we get from Cornell and the DICE lab is treating with formic acid or oxalic acid that are both, although they have the word acid in them, they're organic.
Right.
But we test for mites, and based on the threshold that the scientists have given us, then we'll see whether or not the mite load is too high and if we need to treat, or if the mite load is just fine and they'll continue to develop in a healthy way.
Right.
Yes, but the best thing is prevention, and
yeah.
There are like many steps that beekeepers can take to get that, ranging from genetics to cultural practices to then eventually treating. But prevention is the biggest thing really for us, and constantly monitoring the hive to make sure that there aren't mites.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know about this at all. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, genetics that's a good point. Genetics are very important.
I also want to just tell listeners that if you've been hearing some banging in the background of this podcast, it's, might be a little bit distracting, but it's also really appropriate because it's actually farmers who are on top of our recording studio, which is in a shipping container that has a farm on the roof of it. So apparently they're up there doing some harvesting maybe, or cool. Watering, or something that requires
changing the roof on the farm.
Okay, changing the roof. That makes more sense about because it is very loud.
Yes.
Thanks, Matt. I just think it's like super annoying, but people should know at least it's contributing to more urban farming in our city.
It's part of New York City.
Exactly. And actually, that's funny. One other thing I wanted to ask you guys about is green roofs. New York mm-hmm. City just passed this exciting legislation that is going to mean a lot more roofs are going to be green in the city. Do you think that will affect beekeeping in the city?
I definitely do. When you're keeping bees on a roof, it's kind of important that it's not like black, because it can get really, really hot and eventually kill your bees if you have like a tar on top of your roof. So green roofs are definitely going to make more roofs, a viable option to keep bees on top of it. And it's also going to help the people growing on there as well.
Right. I wonder how long it'll be before we see like the actual results of...
Brooklyn Grange has a design and build department that builds green roofs. And so they have some great examples of, there are like native meadowlands on rooftops around the city. When you don't necessarily know where all the green spaces are when you're on the sidewalk, but once you're on the roof, you can sort of look around and see that there's a lot more green than you thought there was. And now that there's the, Mobilization Act, I think that it'll be really exciting to see what people decide to do with their roofs. Well, with the new builds. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And does Brooklyn Grange... There they are, the farmers. does Brooklyn Grange, when you do those build-outs, do you also sometimes install hives? Like, that's sort of part of it?
Yeah, there are opportunities for cross-pollination. Sorry, I have like 10 bee puns a day. That was my first one today.
I was already... When I was writing the description for this episode earlier, I was like, I really want to use the word buzz, but I don't know.
I know. I've had to limit myself and my friends to 10 bee puns a day. All joking aside, there are opportunities for us to work together. And, have a list that we've worked on together of plants that are really good for supporting pollinators.
Right.
And they've been, they have a lot of roofs around the city that they work on. And so, it's really great to see that more companies and private residences are interested in doing that.
Great. Thank you both so much for being here. I think we're going to wrap up, especially since drilling has commenced on the roof. If people want to find out more about your organizations and your beekeeping programs, where can they find it?
The internets. BrooklynGrangeFarm.com.
Great.
Yes. So you guys can head to citygrowers.org, specifically citygrowers.org/donate if you can. We're having a fundraiser for our summer camp program, trying to fund seeds. So you guys can follow us there and also Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. If you enjoyed the conversation, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it. And don't forget to support independent radio by visiting heritageradionetwork.com and clicking on the beating heart. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.